This is an informal hearing on case number PU-18-381, renewable resource cost adjustment rate. It is 1:33 on Wednesday, 1:33 p.m. I should add, Wednesday, February 13th. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Randy Christman. Commissioner Christman, do you have any opening comments?
Thank you, but no.
Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant goes first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, I'd like our staff once again to introduce themselves, followed by representatives of the company.
Jerry Leon, staff.
Victor Shook with staff.
Carl Liepitz, MD Resources.
Garrett Sanger, Montana Dakota Utilities.
Travis Jacobson, Montana Dakota Utilities.
Stephanie Bosch, Montana Dakota.
Darcy St. Igam, Montana Dakota.
All right, thank you. You can take it away.
Okay, good afternoon, commissioners. Montana Dakota did file its annual update to the Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment Rate 55 on November 2nd of 2018. Another date correction to the slides. 2019 should actually state 2018. The filing requests $16,381,433 to be collected, which reflects a projected 2019 revenue requirement and a true-up of actual costs and revenues through September of 2018. Tariff provisions weren't updated to include special rate contracts and to remove the November 1 filing date from the tariff language. Edits to the language were submitted subsequently on November 20th of 2018.
And I probably should have asked for this the time before, but since this will become a part of the record, and maybe you stated, I apologize, but will you provide an updated copy with 2018 on it?
Yeah, we can certainly do that.
That way the record will be completely accurate.
Right, sure.
Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
So with that introduction, I will turn it over to Travis.
Thanks, Carl. The renewable rider includes the calculated revenue requirement for the Diamond Willow, Cedar Hills, and Thunder Spirit projects, and that does include the 48 megawatt expansion at Thunder Spirit that was placed in service in late 2018. Carl mentioned the cost, $16.4 million. That does include an under-recovered balance of about $900,000. This does represent an increase of approximately 37% from rates as they currently are stated. A residential customer, again, using 894 kWh per month, would see an increase of $18.24 with the proposed rates. The main driver for the increase is the revenue requirement associated with the Thunder Spirit expansion. The investment, as allocated to North Dakota, is about $59 million, and that was actually placed in service on October 31, 2018. And energy coming out of the turbines began November 1, 2018, and beginning on November 1, that generation and those production tax credits were then used in our fuel and purchase power tracker. The ADP, the Advanced Determination of Prudence, and an amendment to the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, number 5870, was approved in case number PU-17-268 and PU-17-269, authorizing the expansion. The revenue requirement and of the $16 million is partially offset through the fuel and purchase power adjustment, as I mentioned. A residential customer using 894 kWh per month would see a reduction through their fuel and purchase power adjustment clause of about $4.73 annually.
So the $4.73 less the $1.52 that the rider is increasing, nets out at 321. Is my math right on that?
I got lost in your numbers. What was that again?
The rider is going up by 1824 annually for a 894 kilowatt per month customer, or $1.52 a month.
Okay.
And just the simple math then would be energy savings of 473 for the same customer, less the $1.52 for a net.
473 is annually. So if you're comparing the other.
Oh, side, right. That's annually. Never mind. That's annually.
So about $1.13 per month.
It would actually go
on a net. And then just to expand just a little bit.
So before you leave that point, because I wasn't finding the 473, so I was a little lost. Is that so? In what was I think being driven at there, this change would increase rates by about $1.50, and that is offset by about 20 cents of energy savings.
About 40 cents of energy.
40, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So just looking at the revenue requirement in total, it is increasing by just a little bit under $3 million. And in the slide, it mentions that the annual revenue requirement for just the Thunder Spirit expansion is about $3.9 million. So the other wind farms are decreasing in rate base. So we're seeing a reduction in the other wind farms. So the addition to this nets out to an overall increase of $2.9 million. Differently than the other two riders that we've talked about, the under-recovered balance came down. In this particular case, the last rider for the wind had an over-recovered balance, and that has now flipped to an under-recovered balance. So that adds about $1.5 million to the rider, or the overall revenue requirement, the change for this. There's a few different things. One of the big items, the Diamond Willow production tax credits on 13 of the 20 turbines all rolled off beginning in December of 17 through February of 18. And the reason is they're a 10-year production tax credit life, and they reach the end of that 10 years over that time frame. So that drives in part why the revenue requirement is going up. And then Garrett had pointed out that if you take all three riders and add them together, that the change to the customer is about $1.60 annually. Increase.
All three.
The transmission rider, the generation rider, and the renewable rider.
You say it's a decrease? It seems like it'd be a slight increase.
I think it's $1.61 a policy. Yes. Yep. So transmission is $8.28 decrease. Generation is $6.84 decrease. The renewable is $18.24 increase.
Right.
And then the fuel and purchase power offset would be $4.73.
Oh.
On an annual basis. So annually, $1.61 increase, or about 13 cents a month.
Okay.
for the average residential customer.
Okay, I'll rephrase, ever so slight increase.
Which PTCs ran out, Diamond Willow or Cedar Hills?
Diamond Willow.
So a lot of the costs of Diamond Willow and Cedar Hills and the original Thunder Spirit are into rates by now. This isn't all being paid. They're not all being paid for through this rider, are they?
Correct. No, they are. They are all covered in this rider.
How much is this rider per month or year? Average, or well, and the total amount of it.
Okay, just the revenue requirements. That would be all three wind farms, including the expansion, is $15.5 million. And just so we understand, that doesn't include any fuel contribution from these farms. But that is the return on those assets, the depreciation. We also have. the operating expenses included in here. So we have some maintenance agreements, some labor, those type of things are all going into that. And the total for all three wind farms is $15.5 million.
We kind of moved opposite in the last rate case. We were trying a experiment to have all of the wind resources in the rider.
I like that.
So we actually moved Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow were in base prior to the last rate case, and we moved them in back into the rider. Not back in. I don't think they were ever in the rider.
No.
Originally, so.
Okay, so that being said, let me explore the $3.9 million on the Thunder Spirit expansion. Is the plan to recover that over how many years is it?
The life that we have on that plant is 25 years.
So when you come up with 3.9 for 2019, that's based on doing over 25 years.
It's on the revenue requirement for 2019, but it assumes the asset balance during 2019, and the depreciation would be based on 25 years. What we have seen... probably a good example is with Thunder Spirit, the original project. The first year is obviously the highest, but it drops off pretty significantly until you hit the end of the life of those production tax credits. Then you see it come back up. But it does fall significantly because it has a tax life of 5 years. So you end up building up deferred tax credits. Or deferred income taxes, I should say, which offset rate base, and then your life is only 25 years, so your book depreciation is building your reserve up fairly quickly as well. So we do see, and which, you know, as Victor was saying, we put all of the wind farms in, both Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow have been fully depreciated for tax purposes. Included in this rider is the effect of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act on any excess deferred taxes associated with these wind farms. That's all getting flowed back through, so the customers are getting that in the year in which it occurs. So that was one of the ideas, is to get it in there, but it does have a fairly short life.
Okay. I want to break this down into much simpler terms than that, though. Outside of tax impacts and that sort of thing, when you plan for something like this, so there's $59 million of investment and $3.9 million of annual revenue requirement. Outside of all these numbers getting flexed by PTCs and income tax accounting and all that stuff, Do you start with the presumption that each of those 25 years is going to be $3.9 million, or is it a declining, and how much does it decline about?
Darcy would maybe be able to answer that better, but it does decline, again, until you get the end of the 25, or the 10-year PTC cycle, then you see it jump up a little bit. But Darcy?
Well, but that's what's collected, but
go ahead and answer, maybe.
So at least the revenue requirement that's required, as Travis did say, especially with the depreciation and the production tax credits that we end up having in that first 10 years, we continue to see the revenue requirement decrease. And just because of the level of production, and as we look at that, as the remaining net book value drops, we were almost approaching a $0 revenue requirement annually when we get out to years like 8, 9, and 10. That basically they're almost a zero cost that will be attributed to the customer for an annual revenue requirement. Now, we see that go up again in year 11 when the PTCs come off, and we'll be back somewhere probably near what the same number was or maybe just a little bit higher in year 11, and then it'll start decreasing from that point again.
Well, I continue to be bothered by the thought of shifting our costs for things that we like to do onto people 10 years from now. It seems to me that if I understood you right, and but I think my point is clear, you get your income tax benefits over 5 years, but we spread them out over the full 25?
Yes.
So it seems to me we ought to be doing the same thing with the PTCs. It just seems fundamentally wrong to me to be living it up on these PTCs and leaving the balance to be paid for in the last 15 years of these projects.
And I guess the only thing I would say is we actually receive the credit today. So a mechanism to not give them back would actually be, I guess, harmful to the customers today if we're getting a full cash benefit today but not providing any credit for that.
You get income tax benefits today.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So we're passing that back to the customers at the time it's received.
So I spent a little bit of time thinking about how something like this could work. I think it was 2015, there was PTCs that you could not use in that tax year, so we had to put them on the books essentially as a liability that we were paying a return on. This would essentially work the inverse of that scenario, whereby probably not in years 1 and 2 because the costs are relatively high, but you know, maybe starting years 3 or 4 or something along those lines, we would start to bank some portion of the PTCs for use in later years to essentially smooth out the cost so that, you know, wind farms get a little bit lumpy for customers to pay for. And I haven't done a whole lot of or spent a whole lot of time to figure out. I'm sure there would be a net cost to customers, you know. So when we approve a wind farm, we say, you know, this is going to save, let's say, $10 million over the life of the project. I'm sure doing this would erode some amount of that. I don't know to what degree, and I'd be interested to know if you can figure out what that would be. And in my opinion, it wouldn't even be necessary to do it in this proceeding, because I don't know that this is the appropriate time, particularly for the Thunder Spirit, to be messing with that, but potentially in future filings. I don't know if you would disagree with that kind of thought process.
I kind of do, because for a couple years, there's never been the appropriate time. It's always, you know, well, we're citing it, and this is going to save us all this money. And then we have a rate case, and, well, there's a settlement, and this is the way it is. And now we have these, and, well, this isn't really the right time. But the fact of the matter is, Diamond Willow is a pretty small thing as far as consumers across the board. What we've been doing these last few years when it comes to adding wind is going to be a huge thing cumulatively to consumers in the state when all these start dropping off in the late 2020s. And I don't know when do we start doing this, and I also do not know why the benefits are lost. I get why they're delayed. They're lost to a consumer who's only a consumer now in these first few years and won't be a consumer later. But if we're accounting for these things correctly and
assuming that we estimate values of money correctly, it seems to me they're not lost. They're just delayed. But so are the costs of building our little economic development projects. And so I need that explained to me where anything is really lost, too.
It wouldn't be lost. It would just, like I said, be eroded to some small degree. And it's mostly because of the time value of money. Just when that calculation, or that calculation has to be done as part of a revenue requirement over a long period of time like this. So to some degree, it's going to reduce the long-term benefit.
Wouldn't it be the exact same degree that we benefit by spreading the cost out over 25 years?
I don't think so. I don't.
There's a time value to that money, too, and we're spreading that out. So.
There is. And that's where the return component starts to come into play. But it could be a very small dollar amount. I don't have a feel for it. I haven't spent any time with, basically just need to spend some time with some percentages and spreadsheets and wait until it spits something out, and I just haven't had a chance to do that yet. But okay. It could be as small as maybe, you know, a couple $100,000, or it could be a couple million. I don't know. Darcy seems to be thinking maybe among more like more millions.
No problem.
I think we could do.
Yeah. I guess I've never thought of delaying the benefit, but it's certainly something a person could.
Once it's produced, you have 10 years until you use it.
Even if you would use it in the year that you can, it's just delaying the benefit for the calculation of that year's revenue requirement. You would simply just create a offset to rate base.
I would suspect this question has come up, if I remember the spreadsheet, Jerry, that you shared, 2,994 megawatts of wind on the ground in North Dakota when I joined about 2 years ago, so the vast majority already in place. I would have to think prior commissions have asked this very same question.
Actually, kind of the opposite. So this was proposed by Otter Tail in a, I want to say, almost 10 years ago. The commission at that time shot them down on the idea. We did mention this last week or the week before when mm-hmm. we were talking to Xcel about their renewable rider. I know I've mentioned it, the same idea back to Otter Tail, kind of kicking their idea back at
them again. Like, hey, yeah, right.
You know, we need to think about this when you get your Mary Court project going. So it's not a new concept.
Right.
But it's an interesting one that I don't think is used very widely. So, yeah, if you'd be able to come up with some numbers.
Yeah, I'd be curious to look at them. I guess I don't know that I have a position at this point until seeing the numbers.
I think we could come up with a high level just for conversation, just to kind of get a check the barometer with it.
Okay. And I think, as mentioned, to what degree would savings be eroded? That would be a part of the, we'll call it a 30,000 foot view.
Okay.
All right. Any other? Were there more slides? I'm trying to remember what point we were at in all of this.
So. Yeah, I got through them all, so.
Commissioner Crispin, do you have any?
Yeah, I'm thinking through what it is. So I don't think in the slides the implementation date is necessarily listed, but in the information that came out when you filed this on November 2nd, wasn't this all planned for a February 1st implementation date? And so the fact that we're probably unlikely to hit that goal is everything probably has to go up just a little bit for 2019 in order to get to the annual amount as far as like these monthly amounts were. Like in a rate case or something, as we delay a solution with this, those are going to have to kick up just a little bit, correct?
I guess we would handle that through the next annual filing, through an over or under recovered balance.
Oh, okay.
If it waits too long, that over or under recovered balance could get to be more substantial than what we had anticipated. But assuming it goes slides a month or something like that, we can handle it through the over or under recovered balance and just catch it in the next rider.
Okay.
And how much time do you need to implement? So if the commission would approve, let's say, February 26th, can you implement March 1?
Yes.
So just as a FYI point, we could approve on our next meeting and implement March 1, which would only have a one-month delay.
Yeah. I think that would be wise.
If it didn't get done on February 26th, but something got done for April, would that be substantial enough that you think it would be most appropriate to recalculate, or would a three-month delay also be something that could easily be slid into the under-recovered category?
I think we'd continue to put it in the over-under-recovered balance and pick it up in the next rider.
Okay.
All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
I do not.
Nothing from staff?
Staff? Company? Okay. Are we talking about the 30,000-foot view, if you will? And
right.
By end of next week?
If we had it by the end of next week, Darcy, that works with you.
We just need to visit the schoolhouse. you and I have a little different idea.
We could make the end of next week sound even better by saying, well, what about a week from today?
Let's go to the end of next week.
Okay. See how that...
Buy a little time.
My parenting skills with my children. Now you know how I negotiated with them. All right. The handout, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding, is now considered evidence. The one caveat, of course, is to have a corrected hard copy, just so we have that in the docket accurately. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached?
No objections.
No objection.
Okay. Is there anything else either advocates or staff or the company would like to add? Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record? Seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.
Thank you.